From WKAR's Studio S at Michigan State University, this is Current Sports.
What is up, beautiful people? You are now locked into WKAR's Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin. On this Wednesday, September 21st, 2016, we are so honored you've allowed Current Sports to be a part of your weekday afternoon yet again. On today's show, we've got a hot one in store for all of you out there as we will chat about the Detroit Tigers, who are right now in the midst of a series against the lowly Minnesota Twins, and they are handling business. And when you look at the grander scheme of things, as we have, what, less than 2 weeks left in the Major League Baseball year, the Tigers are inching closer to a possible wild card berth. We'll put in perspective what they must do in order to, again, accomplish that goal as, again, they take on the Twins. We will also chat about a former Michigan State University employee who had close ties with the MSU gymnastics team, who has now been let go from his job. Yeah, he's been fired, folks. We'll tell you who that is. And we will also have some fun with today's Current Sports as we will chat with Mr. Jim Weber, who is a writer and editor for Athlon Sports. Athlon actually put together a poll on the top 25 college football logos. And you'll be surprised, I think, to know where MSU stood on that list. So Jim will join us on the second segment of our show. And on the back end of the show, we'll talk about a big loss for the Detroit Lions, as well as a pretty interesting article on a former Ohio State star running back. That and so much more. But hey, you know how we start this party. Here are your Current Sports quick hit headliners. All right, and we start with some big news for former Lansing Catholic quarterback star, who is now with CMU, of course, CMU starting quarterbacks, Cooper Rush. He was named as a co-offensive player of the week in the MAC West Division for his performance against UNLV this past weekend. Rush was 20 of 33 passing for 352 yards and 6 touchdowns in a 44-21 win. His 6 TDs set a Kelly Short Stadium record, and Rush also passed the 10,000 career passing yards milestone in the game. All right, Wisconsin head coach Paul Chryst isn't revealing who will be the starting quarterback in Saturday's noon game against Michigan State, but his attempt to play mind games might be futile, as the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel may have leaked Sunday night that redshirt freshman Alex Hornibrook will get the start for the Badgers after he took over for senior Bart Houston in Saturday's nail-biter against Georgia State. Now, even in Wisconsin's upset win against LSU, Houston didn't look great, completing 19 of his 31 passes with not one but two picks. Hornibrook was serviceable with his 8 for 12 and a pick to avoid the upset. But even then, didn't blow anyone away, I should say. Now, in response to the Sentinel report, Chryst stated, quote, "There's going to be games where both have to play," end quote. So it'll be interesting to see who suits up. And again, it seems as though all reports are pointing to Alex Hornibrook. All right, Dr. Larry Nassar, an associate professor in the sports medicine department at Michigan State and former team doctor for USA Gymnastics, he was fired on Tuesday following a lawsuit that was filed accusing him of sexual assault. Now, the lawsuit was filed by a former Team USA Olympic medal winning gymnast from the 2000 Sydney Olympics, identifying herself as JD Doe. Nassar was the acting Team USA physician at the time, and she states that Nassar molested her while performing therapy. Back in 2014, Nassar had a complaint filed against him by a female MSU grad who said that Nassar abused her during a medical procedure. Nassar was temporarily suspended, but an investigation showed no violation of MSU policy and no charges were filed. We'll have more on that story in just a second, folks. Don't touch that dial. All right, former Michigan State hockey captain Michael Ferrantino was a part of the Carolina Hurricanes roster that won the Traverse City NHL Prospect Tournament. How about that? The Hurricanes prospects won the tourney with a 6-4 win over Detroit in the championship game on Tuesday night. Get this, in three games, Ferrantino scored one goal and was +1 overall. Congratulations to Mike. He has certainly been on Current Sports a few times, and it's good to see him having success at the next level. All right, the Detroit Lions. Yeah, their top running back, one of them, Ameer Abdullah, has been placed on injured reserve with a foot injury, which occurred during Detroit's game this past Sunday against the Tennessee Titans. In this season's first two games, Abdullah ran for 101 yards on 18 carries and caught 5 passes for 57 yards and a touchdown. Detroit already has 5 other players on IR. In correspondence to placing Abdullah on IR, the Lions announced this morning that they have signed wide receiver Aaron Dobson. Dobson has spent the first 3 years of his career with the New England Patriots. In his rookie year, he finished with 4 TDs and 519 receiving yards. NFL referee Carl Sheffers. Does that name ring a bell at all? Well, he's set to make his infamous return to the Lions-Packers rivalry this weekend. For those that don't remember the name, Sheffers was the head referee the last time Detroit and Green Bay got it on, which is best known as the Aaron Rodgers Hail Mary game. The Packers' Hail Mary came on an untimed play at the end of the game, a play that was awarded after Sheffers called a phantom face mask on what appeared to be the last play of the game. Check it out.
In the middle of the field, to Jones, to Rodgers. How about that? Rodgers gets it the other way. He's thrown down. We got a flag. The game's not over. Grabbed it by the face mask. That was Devin Taylor.
Personal foul. Face mask. Number 98 defense. 15-yard penalty.
This is like what happened to the Baltimore Jackson. But I think, can the receivers get far enough down the field? Rodgers in trouble. It's going to get there. He turned 32 yesterday. Does he have a vintage moment in him? In the end zone. It is caught for the win. Richard Rodgers with a walk-off touchdown. A game ender for the Packers.
We apologize here at Current Sports. Sorry to bring up the bad memories for Detroit Lions fans everywhere. But yes, Sheffers has vehemently defended his call, saying the tackle was illegal, whether it was a face mask or a horse collar. Yeah, can't forget that moment, folks. Again, Lions-Packers this weekend, folks. All right, well, the Detroit Tigers kept their winning ways going last night with an 8-1 victory over the lowly Minnesota Twins.
High towering drive left center field. That ball is hit well, and that ball is way back and gone.
Ooh, James, did you?
McCann put a charge into that one, and it went a long way. A 3-run shot for the Tigers.
Second deck.
How about that? And James McCann, that 3-run homer in the 6th inning, he absolutely crushed it. We actually talked with our Current Sports PA, Jonathan Chun, about it, and it was actually 445 feet. How about that? Matt Boyd bounced back from his previous outing, allowing 3 hits over 8 innings to go along with 7 strikeouts. With Ian Kinsler and V-Mark getting the day off, Detroit's offense, powered by a 3-run homer from McCann that you just heard, and a solo shot from Miggy. Detroit remains 7 games in back of the Cleveland Indians in the Central and 1.5 games in back of Baltimore for the second wild card spot. Buck Farmer takes the mound versus the Twins tonight with the first pitch scheduled for 8:10 p.m. According to the Miami Herald, former Michigan basketball great Glenn Rice, who also played on the 1989 national championship team, is, quote, almost broke, end quote, in a paternity lawsuit that was made available to the public. It was revealed Rice pleaded to have his child support payments lowered from $1,500 to just $600 a month. Rice played 15 seasons in the NBA and earned an estimated $35 million over his career, but has been unable to find a consistent job and has made a slew of bad investments. Rice, no exception to Sports Illustrated study showing 60% of NBA players go broke within 5 years of retirement. More on that story in just a second. And last but certainly not least, all the talk coming into the World Cup of Hockey this year was for the potential of a Canada versus United States final. But after just two games, the U.S. has been eliminated from finals contention. The U.S. lost to Team Europe 3-0 in their opening game Saturday and needed a win last night against Canada to stay alive. After opening the scoring early in the game, the U.S. gave up four straight goals to the high-powered Canadian offense, who held on to win 4-2 and eliminate Team USA.
Pacioretty tried to clear the puck. He couldn't. Right in front, Matt Duchene scores! Here's John Tavares with Bergeron. What a move! Tavares into some skates. He scores!
Oh, that's certainly a tough pill to swallow. And that wraps up your current sports quick hit headliners. If you want to call in and be a part of the show, you know that number, 517-355-WKAR. That's 517-355-9527. You can also join us via social media at facebook.com/currentsports, or even tweet us at my Twitter handle at AlMartinWKAR, or tweet the show at WKAR_sports. Without further ado, let's start the show.
Somewhat, and we picked it up on all phases of our game, and we're not going to be denied today.
All right, congratulations on a great performance, Glenn. All right.
And that is how we start this afternoon edition of WKAR's Current Sports. I trust that you all have been having a fantastic week. It is Wednesday. Can you believe that? Hump day, folks. Just get over the hump. Two more days, and then the weekend ensues, all right? You can do it. You can do it. And we plan on helping you in doing that by, of course, breaking up the monotony of your usual work week by listening to Current Sports right here on WKAR AM 870. Of course, I am your host, Al Martin. I love to start the show off with something off the beaten path. You know, the best thing that I saw, not just in the sports world, but beyond, coming into the show. And I tell you what, folks, you guys know that one of my getaways, one of my safe havens away from the job is not only the game of golf, which I love and adore, but I love me a good TV show, all right? And I plopped down on my couch last night, and I was glued to Netflix. And I tell you what, it's a funny story because I chatted with Isaac about this. This is also one of Isaac's favorite shows on Netflix. It's called Stranger Things, all right? And, I started it sometime last week, and I thought it was just 5 episodes long, and I thought that was it, but it's actually 8 episodes long. So I had 2 more episodes left last night, and I absolutely flew through them. It's been a long time, Isaac, since I've actually got up off my couch, stared at the television, and began clapping after a season. That season 1 of Stranger Things was absolutely brilliant writing, I must say. And I'm not a big sci-fi guy. It's a sci-fi
neither.
Show. I'm not big into the whole aliens and a third dimension and all of this stuff. But that show had me hooked. And a lot of it had to do with the writing. And a lot of it had to do with the actors in the show. The four
they
kids.
They were great.
Well, the 5 kids that act throughout the show, the main characters. Wow. They're fantastic, and they have bright acting futures ahead of them. I loved it, man. I really did.
Yeah, they were all fantastic. I thought it was funny, though. I can't say enough about the show. I can just throw compliments their way all day long. But I thought it was funny that you thought it was 5 episodes because it reminded me. I don't think you were this person. But I had 2 separate friends throughout Sherlock, the series Sherlock, also on Netflix. Great production from the BBC. But anyway, they watched the first 2 seasons. I'd say, dude, did you watch the new season? They're like, yeah. Man, it was crazy. I can't wait to find out how he did it. I said, how he did what? And of course, they're like, what do you mean? I mean, how he's going to come back to life or whatever. And I don't want to spoil anything. That's not spoiling.
Right.
But at the same time, I was like, dude, there's a 3rd season out. I had 2 separate friends who had no idea that the 3rd season was out.
Stop.
So I was just telling them about the 3rd season. And they're like, yeah. Wait, I didn't see that part.
Right.
So
what happened
that was
with
very
me,
similar.
Yeah, what happened with me, I fell asleep. You know, I was like half awoke watching episode 5. And I'm like, oh. And I popped up right when something big happened. I'm like, oh, that's a good way to end the 1st season. It leaves you hooked. And I just stopped watching.
It's a cliffhanger.
Yeah,
quite
right?
Literally.
Literally. No. And I go back 2 days ago, and I'm like, whoa, hold on. This has 8 episodes, so yeah. But it was absolutely fantastic. For those that are looking for a new TV show, I highly recommend, and I know you do too, Isaac, Stranger Things. What you just heard in that montage was, of course, just a fantastic game from former Michigan hoop great Glenn Rice. That game actually took place back in the day, back in 1995. How about that, right? Where Glenn Rice in a game against the Orlando Magic. This is when Glenn Rice was balling out for the Miami Heat back in the day. Glenn Rice made the game one worth watching as he scored 56 points. Get this, on 27 field goal attempts. He was actually 20 of 27 in that game. He was 7 of 8 from the 3-point line. One of Glenn's best NBA games. And at the time, it had eclipsed Michael Jordan's, because, you know, this is when Michael was balling out. This is when he came back from baseball and right when he began that second three-peat. But at the time, it was the highest scoring game of that season. That was before Michael Jeffrey Jordan found out and went off for more than 56 later on that year. That's just Michael Jeffrey Jordan, right? So I want to bring up Glenn because, as you heard in our quick hit headliners, again, really briefly, I always want to comment on this. I just don't get it. I don't get it. It's another athlete who had a very well-off career. Another athlete who is, quote-unquote, broke. Glenn Rice, who won a national championship back in 1989 and made about $66 million over 15 NBA years. Again, I want to say that again. Made about $66 million. None of his, the average American doesn't even sniff 1 mil, all right? Let alone $66 million. $66 million over 15 years, and now is almost broke. And the records indicate that Rice was allowed to lower his monthly child support obligation from $1,500 to $600 because of his, quote, dire financial straits. Yeah, folks, the Miami Herald, just to read a quick snippet here from the Miami Herald, they say, quote, he has attempted to become gainfully employed in various capacities, but has been unable to earn a semblance of meaningful income. That's what the filing says. Rice's lawyer did not respond to request for comment from the Herald. But it just blows my mind. How many athletes who go on to have great and elongated NBA careers where you're making millions of dollars, it blows my mind how so many of those athletes go down the wrong path, act recklessly, for lack of better words, with those finances, you know, going out to the clubs and making it rain. And, you know, all of a sudden you have family members that come out of nowhere and you feel like you have to be Superman for every single one of them, which I get to a certain degree because, and I can only imagine what those pressures are. I'm not rich by any means, okay? When you all of a sudden become a millionaire and accrue, again, $66 million over 15 years, you are going to have family members that come out of anywhere, you know, just with different ventures of their own, you know, and depending on the type of person you are, you feel like that you have to take care of every single one of them. And those pressures, and again, you know how family is. I mean, you know, hey, blood is thicker than water, and you don't want to shortchange your fam. So there's pressures there, but at the end of the day, you have to learn how to say no, okay? And you have to be responsible as well. You have to be responsible. I mean, how many athletes have we seen just, you know, on the road, they get all this attention, they have, you know, women that are knocking at their door every single night, and they act recklessly, and then all of a sudden, you look down the pike, and they have all of these kids, and they have to pay child support, they're not in a committed relationship, so that's something else to deal with. I mean, there just has to be a better support system for athletes, especially those athletes who come from nothing and all of a sudden become something in the pro ranks. There has to be a better support system for those athletes to learn and to hammer home how to act fiscally responsible with your funds. So waking up and seeing this article from the Miami Herald centered on Glenn Rice, again, who has close ties to here in Michigan when it comes to sports. Again, Michigan basketball star, folks. And now to see that he is, quote, almost broke, it turns my stomach. And, you know, you can go back. If you really want to see a great documentary that really breaks down all of the nuances and layers to this conversation, of course, the famous ESPN 30 for 30 documentary entitled Broke, which actually features a Michigan State, former Michigan State athlete who went on to have a great career in the NFL, Mr. Andre Bad Moon Rising. Andre talks about how he acted irresponsible with his funds over time. But that documentary, Broke, really dives into that subject. And you really get to see all of the factors that contribute to an athlete, one that makes millions on top of millions of dollars throughout his career, how that man can end up broke. So I encourage you guys to check it out. But really, really sad news concerning Glenn Rice. I'm really hoping that that he gets back on his feet. I'm rooting for you, Glenn. We all are. All right, folks, I want to make a transition now and talk about the Detroit Tigers, who are right now 1.5 games back of the Baltimore Orioles for the second wild card spots. Now, again, folks, they're handling business. They should beat the Minnesota Twins. They're handling business against this team, and it's keeping them, again, right in the thick of things, right in the conversation for a possible wild card berth. Some encouraging signs, though, last night. Matt Boyd, the former Lansing Lugnuts pitcher, he goes a career-high 8 innings, pitches deep into that game, and really gives the Tigers an upper hand from start to most of the finish, right? He retired 18 of 19 batters. He struck out 5 consecutive Twins from innings 3 to 5. Pretty impressive stuff there, right? And what's even more impressive than that is that the Tigers were able to have great run support without the likes of Ian Kinsler, who was held out due to a concussion, and Victor Martinez with that bruised right knee. To score 8 runs without those two names, I must say, folks, is pretty impressive. And it begs the question, just like when we bring up the conversation when the Tigers have great run support like this on any given day, why can't you do this on a consistent basis? That's the big question for me. Hector Santiago for the Twins didn't allow a hit until Andrew Romine in the third inning. And then from there, half of Detroit's final 16 batters against Santiago reached base, folks. 7 with hits. It was impressive. So again, it took until the third inning for the Tigers to start to get that train rolling. But once they did, boy, oh boy, oh boy. They were fun to watch last night. Cameron Maben, he's my Tiger. He has been just a ball of great positive energy, and that has transcended directly to his play on the baseball field. Cameron Maben, he tripled home Romine. How about Miguel Cabrera? He doubled and scored in the fourth. And then McCann's homer that you just heard in our Quick Hit Headliners finished off the 4-run sixth. And going back to Cabrera had a moment that really, you know, and we've had callers call in and we've had different opinions about the year that Miggy has had this season. But I tell you what, Miguel Cabrera is still a very, very, very good baseball player, and he is still one of the best hitters in the game. Just to put in context the effort that we saw from Miggy last night. Cabrera, you know, out of nowhere, he was in the mood to run when he lined a fourth inning pitch from Santiago off the bottom of the right field wall. He then legged out a double on a really close slide at second base. He then tagged up and beat Byron Buxton's throw to third on a J.D. Martinez fly ball, then broke home on Upton's ground out to third. Now, Cabrera, he was initially ruled out. Replay determined that his slide then had beat catcher John Ryan Murphy's tag, giving Detroit that 2-0 lead. But that sequence, I mean, if you watch it, folks, it was so cool to watch because we haven't seen Miggy run like that. You know, I mean, Miguel Cabrera, and I go back to the comments that he had last week concerning his team. And he sort of put in perspective that, hey, you know, a message to his teammates, hey, block out all of the garbage that you're reading on social media. All of those out there, you know, as Tom Izzo likes to call them, I love to bring up this, is one of my favorite quotes from Tom Izzo, cowards hiding behind keyboards, right? Block out everybody on social media because they're going to criticize you. It's a what have you done for me lately sports world that we live in today. Block out all of that mess and just go out there and have effort every single time you step out on the baseball field, and we going to be all right. That was basically the message that Miguel Cabrera had last week for his team, and he's practicing what he preaches by that moment last night, folks. I thought it was fantastic, and afterwards Miguel said, quote, I wanted to stay aggressive on the bases, trying to make something happen. You don't have to be 100% sure you're going to be safe. If you think you've got a chance, you've got to do it. Miguel Cabrera realizes how important this stretch of baseball is for the Detroit Tigers. If they want to have any shot at making the playoffs, that effort has to be there, and it has to be there game in and game out. Also want to note, with Martinez out, McCann made his first career start as a designated hitter, and he really swung like it, folks. After striking out and fouling out in his first 2 at-bats, McCann, he chased Santiago from the game by pouncing on that hanging sinker for a tape measured. Again, you know, looking at it here in our headlines, I want to take a note of it because I got this from Jonathan Chun, but 445 feet in the sixth inning. That's how far McCann hit that baseball. I mean, that is absolutely unbelievable. But McCann, that's just coming up big. You know, when your number's called, go out there and do your job. And that's exactly what happened. So now, what's next for the Tigers? Buck Farmer, who has a 4.27 ERA, he will move in from the bullpen to make his first start for Detroit this year. Taking the mound for the middle game of the 3-game series tonight, first pitch set for 8:10 p.m. Farmer pitched 4 1/3 scoreless innings against the Twins in relief last week, if you remember, at Comerica Park. Farmer will go against Jose Berrios, who is set to start for the Twins in the game tonight. Now, Berrios has struggled this year. Twins want to give him a chance to finish up the season strong. This is yet another game going against what I like to call them, the lowly Minnesota Twins, that they should win. Now, in comparison to the other teams that are in this wild card race, well, let's look at those who are holding down those two spots right now. The Baltimore Orioles are in a two-game losing streak against the Boston Red Sox. They have lost the last two games against the Red Sox, 5-2, 5-2. They will take on Boston again. It's a four-game series at home for the Orioles. That game will take place at 7:05 p.m. As far as the Toronto Blue Jays are concerned, they are on a two-game win streak. They beat the Seattle Mariners yesterday 10-2 on the road, and then they return home to play the Yankees in a three-game set starting this Friday. So, again, a game and a half in back of Baltimore. Baltimore on a two-game losing streak, playing the Red Sox, and then they go on to play the Arizona Diamondbacks, not exactly a stout team in the majors. But this is a pretty good scenario for the Tigers, if you ask me. But it comes down to a word that I bring up and I have brought up probably a million times throughout our history here on our airwaves. You have to be consistent. And this is the time where you got to show up. You got to show up. Less than 2 weeks left. The Tigers cannot afford to have any days off. Before we hit our first break, I want to invite Isaac Constance to the show, our engineer of WKAR's Current Sports. Isaac, what do you think about the Tigers in this stretch of baseball?
Well, I've got to remind our listeners, first of all, that it's the Twins. You call them the lowly Minnesota Twins. Mm-hmm. You could call them so many other negative adjectives besides
that's
that.
That's being nice.
This is the worst team in baseball since the 2013 Houston Astros. We have not seen a team that has failed to play the game fairly adequately since 2013. I mean, that says a lot. So these are games that the Tigers should be putting away and putting away handily if they want to make the playoffs or make any sort of imprint and impact on the playoffs. But at the same time, they've been playing well. The bats are going, and it couldn't be a better time for this series where the Tigers are 13-4 this year to happen because the Tigers need the momentum. Coming down the stretch, they have closed the gap a little bit on the Baltimore Orioles. They just need to keep the train rolling. And if I'm not mistaken, the Baltimore Orioles and the Toronto Blue Jays do have one series to play before the season's over. So the Tigers will have their chance. It's just if they can capitalize.
Putting you on the spot real briefly here. Yes or no?
No.
The Tigers make – okay, you already know where I was going. Do the Tigers make the playoffs? You say no.
I'm still saying no.
I'm saying no as well, okay? I just think they're so all over the place.
That it's lowly Twins.
And again
– we can't take too much from it.
Yeah. All right. Let's hit our first break. When we come back, we'll have some fun, all right? We'll invite to the show for the first time Jim Weber, writer and editor for Athlon Sports. Jim is going to give us a breakdown on the top 25 best college football logos. And you may be surprised who sits at number one on that list. We'll be right back. Welcome back to WKAR's Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin. Again, you can join the conversation simply by picking up that phone and dialing 517-355-WKAR. Again, that's 517-355-9527, or go to our Facebook page at facebook.com/currentsports. Tweet us at Al Martin WKAR or at WKAR_sports. I want to read two comments here that come from two listeners, dedicated listeners of the show. One, my frat brother, Justin Dunn, says, quote, and this goes into the conversation we just had about Glenn Rice going broke throughout his career, a career in which he spent 15 years in the NBA and accrued more than $60 million. Justin says, quote, they've had nothing for the most part of their lives, and all of a sudden, they are multi-millionaires, end quote. Very, very true. And then also David McNeely. David says, quote, athletes need financial mentors, end quote. And that is so true. And you know what, Isaac? A lot of it has to do with the background of that athlete. And again, you know, going back to what Justin said, I mean, a lot of these guys come from backgrounds where, I mean, how many times have we heard the story about the athlete who comes from nothing, you know, who who's in a household where, you know, his family's on welfare, or he has a bunch of siblings and, you know, really no food on the table, and you know, basketball or football is that out. And all of a sudden, that athlete makes it, and he's expected to be the financial, he's expected to really be the bank for his entire family. I mean, and I agree with David, there needs to be financial mentors. That is something that is constantly lacked in professional sports, and it's so sad to see athletes who just don't know how to manage that money.
Well, and you're seeing more and more sports unions, such as the NBA Players Association or the NFL Players Association, start to implement that training when the players enter the league. So the leagues and the players themselves are making the right steps, but at the same time, we need to revise the social structure that these athletes are given.
I totally agree with you. That's an elongated conversation, to say the least, all right? Well, I'll tell you what. Let's invite our guest for today's Current Sports. So lighten the mood a little bit and have some fun. We invite now to the show Jim Weber, writer and editor for Athlon Sports. And it's pretty cool because Jim put out an article not too long ago that centers on the world of college sports. And he made a list of the top 25 college sports logos. How cool is that, right? And I want to dive into this list because it is one that I have a ton of questions about, all right? First off, Jim, welcome to Current Sports. How you doing?
I'm good. Thanks for having me.
Now, Jim, to start off this convo, how did the idea even come about, you know, to put together a poll like this? And what was the criteria that you all were grading upon? Was it just you making this decision? Is this just your list, or is it a poll out to the public?
Yeah, this is my list. And it came about because I did a list ranking the top 25 uniforms, and people, you know, loved debating that so much that we decided to do one about college sports logos as well. And in terms of how we graded the uniforms or how I graded the uniforms, I went with just the aesthetics of the logo, the color combination, and the creativity. That's why I tried to limit the number of just block letter logos, because it feels like about half the 128 FBS schools have those.
So true. Now, for our listeners out there, if you haven't gotten a chance to check out this list, I want to just riddle off the top 10 real briefly here. At 10, you have Colorado. At 9, Washington State. At 8, Georgia Tech. 7, East Carolina. 6, Kansas State. 5, Miami. 4, North Carolina. 3, Virginia. 2, Texas. And sitting at numero uno, and I'm pretty sure all of our listeners out there will have a chuckle about this one, seeing as though everyone in Michigan just about bleeds green and white, Michigan State sits at number one. Simple question for you, Jim. What makes Michigan State top dog?
Well, I think it starts with the mascot of the school. I mean, a Spartan is just something very legendary, very historic, that's very cool, and epitomizes toughness. And you take that, and they just did a great job with the logo. I love the Spartan helmet with the feather on the top, or whatever that headdress is. I really like USC's logo for the Trojan, but their primary logo is actually just Trojans in script with the interlocking SC underneath it. Mm-hmm. So I think that would have been competing with Michigan State's if that was their primary logo, but it's not. So I would say, you know, I've been a long admirer of MSU's logo. I actually went to the University of Michigan, so it kind of pained me to put them at the number one spot. But, yeah, I remember they actually talked about tweaking it a little bit about 5 years ago because Nike wanted to update the logo as it updates everything. But I'm glad they stuck with what's been working with them for so long.
You know, Jim, that was a great segue into my next question here, because if you look at the entire list, Michigan actually sits at 25 and MSU sits at number one. And I had the question, you know, brewing on my mind whether or not there was any bias here. But you know, going to U of M, there was no bias here. I mean, this was clear, just cut. This is why you like the logo, and you do a great job in explaining it.
Yeah, I mean, I love Michigan's football uniforms, but the logo is just a block M. And like I said, creativity was a big part of it. And there are so many schools with a block letter logo that, you know, I like the maize and blue combination. I think the M is still very iconic, so I thought it was worthy of being on the list. Mm-hmm. But in terms of originality and it giving me something more than just a letter or, you know, a name and script, that's where I really differentiated between schools like Michigan and schools like Michigan State.
Now, when breaking down your reasoning as to why Michigan State sits at number one on the article, I just want to point out something. It says that, quote, after years of endlessly toying with the shade of green, Michigan State finally hit the jackpot, end quote. What do you think about this shade of green? You know, kind of like this forest green tone. What do you think makes it stand out amongst other logos?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's just something about the hunter green that gives you kind of that feel of a Spartan that feels tough. And I remember, you know, back to when I was a kid in the 90s to when I was in Michigan and afterward, it felt like they were constantly tinkering with, you know, I remember when you used to have the S on the helmet, it looked kind of like a Skittles. That was not the best look.
Right.
Then they've kind of gone back and forth. The uniforms, I mean, Michigan State in the uniforms, how many times have they changed the basketball and football uniforms over the years? But I love the current Hunter Green. I think it just fits the nickname of a Spartan really well.
I have to ask, Jim, were there any other logos that were like on the fringe of cracking the top 25 that you kind of debated about when compiling this list?
Well, I'll say the ones that were toughest to evaluate were ones that I used to really like, and then they've been quote-unquote updated, like we talked about Michigan State doing. So Florida State, I had them on at 20, but I would have had them a lot higher if they hadn't updated their logo a couple years ago. A lot of people called it the Screaming Elvis logo. So
right.
I'm all about if you have a great logo, just leave it as is. Don't try and improve upon it because you end up normally just downgrading instead.
Jim, how much does the apparel look play into the conversation? How much did you take into account, okay, how does this logo look on a uniform or a helmet? Did that have any factor in making this decision?
Yeah, I mean, I think it definitely, when you see it on a helmet or on a uniform, it gives you an idea compared to just seeing it, you know, on a website. It gives you a real context, and also you can compare it to the other team they're playing. So, you know, the other ones I listed there, you know, I love that Texas, the Longhorn logo is just, again, very iconic. North Carolina's interlocking NC, another great logo. Virginia, I mean, I don't think people remember that at one time their helmet was just a white helmet with a blue stripe and an orange stripe going down the middle. So upgrading again to something more than a blank helmet or just a letter, the crossing swords is just, you know, that's kind of a timeless look, whether that's on a nation's flag or a logo. You know, these are things that can be applied anywhere. You know, keep it simple, make it sharp, and make it more than just a letter, and you're on the right path.
I like that. Folks, if you're just now joining us here on WKAR's Current Sports, we are chatting with Jim Weber. Of course, he is a writer and editor for Athlon Sports and has compiled a list entitled College Football's Top 25 Logos in 2016. So, Jim, I want to have some fun with you really briefly here. I want to just pick out a few logos, and you just give me thoughts on because I want to bring out, actually, I'll do it this way. I'll bring out two logos that are right next to each other, you know, either 21 or 22 on the list or 17 and 18, and I want you to sort of break down why you decided to pick that respective logo over the one that's ranked one spot lower, because a few of these I feel like could be very, very close in contention against one another. So first off, I want to start with Navy and Notre Dame. Now, if you look at the Navy and Notre Dame logo, you actually rank Notre Dame at number 23, Navy at 24. They have the exact same color scheme going on. Really, the only difference is the script in the Notre Dame logo, and of course you have the D in the back of the N. But with the Navy, I like the star sitting above the right side of the N. How close was that for you?
Yeah, I mean, it's tough. It's splitting hairs, you know, when it comes down to things like that. I mean, with Notre Dame, and maybe this is just, you know, a bias because it is Notre Dame, and Notre Dame is such an iconic college football program, where you think about Newt Rockne in his interlocking ND sweatshirt that used to be their football uniform, mm-hmm. or you just think, you know, when you see that symbol, you just automatically think Notre Dame. I don't think a lot of people even know what Navy's logo is.
Right.
You know, the block N, again, I try and steer away from block letters, but I love the North Star because it's so associated with the Navy and with ships. So I like that about it, but wasn't quite enough to overcome the mystique of Notre Dame.
Okay, what about 18 Tennessee and 17 West Virginia? What stood out? Because they both have just letters in their logos. Why did they crack the list, and what put WV over Tennessee?
Yeah, I mean, I think with Tennessee, you know, I really like the block T, and I like that shade of orange. I know some people complain about it because if you go to Neyland Stadium, there's about 110,000 people wearing the exact same color. I like the logo, but I had to just give the nod to a school that did a little more than just a block letter. So the flying WV, as it's called, you know, I think it's really clever because it has that look of the mountains, you know, encompassing the nickname Mountaineers. Mm-hmm. And there's just something about it that it's like two puzzle pieces that just belong together. So I thought there was a little more creativity in that than with just the block T.
Jim, what was the toughest part about compiling this list to you?
Yeah, I would say, you know, being able to say, okay, why is this one spot above another one is really tough. And you just had to go with gut feeling because, you know, you can break it down only so much till at one point you just say, I like this one over this one. I can't really explain why. It just feels right.
Love that. What's the feedback you've gotten about this list? What has the feedback been like?
Well, you know, every school wants to say that their logo should be on this list and should be higher. But there was actually a Reddit college football poll where they ranked the logos. And Michigan State and Georgia Tech and Washington State, I know, were three of the four finalists. So I felt pretty confident that, you know, the majority of fans really liked those three logos. So I felt like I definitely had to include those. But I did want to give one shout-out. People keep asking, what's the worst logo in college football? And I always say Eastern Michigan. And the green block E is just so simple, so boring. If anyone at Eastern is listening, please update your logo and the nickname. The Eastern Michigan Eagles used to be the Hurons, was actually somewhat original.
Yeah.
Now it's just an extremely bland nickname that, you know, about five other FBS teams have. So please reach out to me if you want some rebranding help.
I absolutely love it, Jim. And folks, our listeners out there, I want to know, what do you guys think about Jim's list? And what do you think is the best logo in college football? And what do you think is the worst? I mean, call in 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527. Jim, before we get you out of here, are there any other logo polls that you are currently working on?
No, I'm done with the uniforms and the logos for now. I think I'll be doing something about alternate uniforms, which ones look the best, because as you know, teams are now wearing a uniform pretty much a new uniform every week.
Mm-hmm.
So that should be coming out soon once we get a better look at the alternate looks teams have this fall.
You being a U of M grad, what do you think about the whole connection with U of M and the Jordan Jumpman brand?
You know, I know a lot of people crack jokes about having a basketball player on a football uniform. I mean, it doesn't really matter to me. Whatever the players like, whatever the recruits like, I think the end product looks pretty good. I'm excited to see what they come out with on the basketball uniforms because the Adidas Michigan basketball uniforms were a disaster. I love Michigan State's look. I hope Michigan comes back with something Fab Five-ish to put its uniforms back near the top tier.
That'd be really cool, bridging a bit of the old with the new. Love that. Jim, how can people read your work, my friend?
If you just follow me on Twitter at Jim M. Weber, or if you go to athlonsports.com, I write there once a week about what's going on in college football on Saturdays.
Jim Weber, writer and editor for Athlon Sports. Jim, thank you so much for your time this afternoon. That was fun.
Thank you. Bye.
Let's hit our second break. When we come back, we will put a bow on this afternoon's current sports by updating you all on a pretty troubling story concerning a man who had close ties to the Michigan State University athletic program. Also, a big loss for the Detroit Lions. Don't go anywhere. You are listening to WKAR's Current Sports. Welcome back to WKAR's Current Sports. Less than 10 minutes left in the show. Want to bring this story to you all. This is breaking news. Reading this via ESPN. The Cleveland Browns are aware of an arrest warrant issued for receiver Josh Gordon. Of course, Gordon has gone through many ups and downs, mostly downs throughout his NFL career. In a paternity case. Yeah, the Browns said Gordon and his attorney are working with county courts to resolve the matter. WOIO, Channel 19 in Cleveland, reported that the warrant was issued August 31st after Gordon failed to respond to several subpoenas over the course of a year, demanding that he take a DNA test. So yet another athlete getting involved with just a situation I just don't get. You know, he may have to call up the Maury Show and get this paternity test done so we can start focusing on football with Josh Gordon and not these off-the-field antics, dude.
No, it's sad. It's just a simple matter of keeping your head off the field. It's not difficult. It really isn't. I understand the debate coming up from nothing, not knowing how to use the money. But the point is, millions of dollars, plural, is a lot of money. And it takes a lot of time to waste it. And you actually got to put some work into that. You've got to be kidding me.
Yeah,
you know?
Josh Gordon. And he's a guy who just couldn't stop smoking weed and kept failing drug tests. And I just don't get it with Josh. At some point, and I understand background and so on and so forth, but at some point you got to wake up and just get with it. You know what I mean? And I have no sympathy left for Josh Gordon.
Well, all this made me think, too. You remember the Josh Smith quote from about a year ago that infuriated both of us?
Uh-huh. Yep. About
Josh Smith. Couldn't get by, couldn't feed his family with a $6 million contract.
Don't forget about Latrell Sprewell also made that idiotic comment as well about feeding his family, all that kind of stuff. Yeah.
Gee, it's just what is up with athletes nowadays. Back in the day, athletes used to get a middle-class salary. Now they're some of the richest in the United States, and it seems like it's harder off for them.
Right. I agree with you, man. I don't get it, Isaac. Unbeknownst to me, without a doubt, dude. And before we proceed here, and I want to bring up a troubling story when it comes to a now former Michigan State University employee. But we just chatted with Jim Weber of Athlon Sports. He compiled his list of the top 25 college football logos in the sport today. And we talked about our favorite logos or our worst. And, you know, it's an interesting list because Michigan State sits atop at number one. That really shocked me. And just to read the whole description here, Michigan State's in-state rival may have the best college football uniforms, but it's Sparty who can lay claim to the game's best logo, end quote. I want to know, what do you think is the best logo in college sports? Do you agree that the Michigan State Spartan head is top dog? Call in 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527. We actually have a man who wants to weigh in on that exact conversation. On line one, we now have Dave from Wyoming who wants to weigh in on the logos. Dave, how you doing?
Well, good. I'll weigh in on two quick things. I'll get off your phone. It's one, a buddy of mine is in the sports uniform business. Mm-hmm. And he said, you know, one of the reasons all the colors are better is because the materials are better. They don't have to worry about fading. You know, you can get a team that has, you know, football uniforms can be bought and washed and washed and washed, mm-hmm. and they always look the same color-wise, right? Those Michigan State greens, you could sometimes see the color fade on the jerseys as the season went by, mm-hmm. if you're as old as I am.
Right.
And now all that's changed. And, you know, I will, and as a backhanded compliment, you know, if he's excited, the guy, I guess, is excited about what they're going to do with Michigan basketball uniforms with Fab Five. You think they might put a pocket in the shorts for him?
That was the joke of the day right there.
It's
Dave,
a great one.
Hey, Dave, kudos to you. That was pretty good, I must say, right? That was fantastic. But I'm looking forward to see what they do because, again, it is the Jordan brand. And, you know, the Jordan Jumpman just has so much symbolic reference to it when it comes to just greatness in athletics. And, you know, you talk about just the amount of money that Michael Jordan has made throughout his entire athletic career, let alone basketball, right? I mean, it's off the charts. So this was good overall for U of M marketing, if you ask me, Dave. All right. Well, folks, again, Well, 4 minutes left. We probably won't get another call in. But thanks, Dave. That was a good point. That was fantastic. Pockets in the shorts. Oh, boy. Ed Martin, right? The Martin family kind of disowned him when that whole thing went along, Isaac. Just letting you know. All right. We'll introduce this story to you guys for those that are just now tuning in. And I will certainly have more comments on this story. But if you haven't heard, a Michigan State University doctor by the name of Dr. Larry Nassar, facing a growing chorus of sexual assault allegations, has been fired by the university. Nassar, an associate professor in MSU's College of Osteopathic Medicine, who served as USA Gymnastics team physician during 4 Olympic Games, already has been relieved of clinical and patient duties. Last week, the university initiated the process to end Nassar's fixed-term appointment. He was formally fired yesterday, and that was noted by university spokesman Jason Cody. But there are many, many details concerning this conversation on Dr. Larry Nassar, and the university has received many new allegations of sexual assault by Nassar since last week. This is coming from, again, the university spokesman Jason Cody. The university's crime log indicates 11 sexual assaults that have been reported to police since September 13th. The reports allege that incidents took place in 1996, 1999, 2000, 2001, 08, 2010, 2011, and 2014. Just going to let that soak in. I'm going to have comments because I can't cover it in, what, less than 2 minutes here. I'm going to have more comments on that story tomorrow. We will also talk about a loss for the Detroit Lions in the backfield and Mr. Amir Abdullah, who has now been placed on injured reserve. And also, you know, you talk about the backgrounds of athletes, and athletes are just like human beings. We are, for the most part, again, we have the power to change those circumstances, okay? Because I think the pity party does end at a certain point. But when it comes to, you know, the backgrounds that we grow up in, you know, being quote-unquote products of our environment, there's a former Ohio State running back great who was profiled in a very interesting ESPN article. Ezekiel Elliott, folks. I'm going to weigh in on that article because there's a few things I want to bring up that I think speaks to today's athlete, all right? So that will take place on tomorrow's show. In the meantime, we are out of time. Big thanks to Jim Weber of Athlon Sports and to, of course, you for tuning in to this edition of WKAR's Current Sports with me, Al Martin, right here on WKAR AM 870 East Lansing. Same time, same place tomorrow. Take care and be easy, people.